It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Computers have come a long way in the past century, from the giant room-sized machines of the 50s to the smartphones in our pockets right now. And there's a lot we can do with them, from everyday tasks like listening to our favorite public radio shows on a podcast to far more complex problems like modeling what could happen to our climate in the coming decades. But current technology can take us only so far, and that is where quantum computing comes in. It's thought to be a major leap forward, and Illinois wants to get in on the action. If all goes according to plan, in the next few years, Chicago will become home to the Illinois Quantum and Microelectronics Park, or IQMP for short. The hope is the park will become a hub for government, researchers, and industry to work together on developing this technology. The University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign is taking the lead on this effort, and with us now to talk about it are two professors with big roles in the park. Harley Johnson is CEO of the IQMP. He's also Associate Dean for Research in the Granger College of Engineering at U of I and a founder professor in the Department of Mechanical Science and Engineering. Professor Johnson, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Brian DeMarco is Associate Director and Chief Technology Officer of the park. He's also Director of the Illinois Quantum Information Science and Technology Center at Illinois and Professor of Physics in the Granger College. Professor DeMarco, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, Professor DeMarco, I'm going to begin with you. What are we hoping quantum computers might do that even the most powerful computers we have now cannot do?
Brian, that's a great question. So there are certain problems that even our most powerful supercomputers will never be able to solve exactly. Some of these are very important to science and things like pharmaceuticals. So for example, one problem that's really difficult is how molecules stick to each other and interact with each other, which is exactly how medicine helps your body heal from a disease. And so one of the hopes is that some of these problems can be greatly accelerated. So discovery of pharmaceuticals, discovery of new materials for better batteries can be greatly accelerated by quantum computers.
And what makes quantum computing work differently from what we might call classical computing? And Professor DeMarco, I sometimes say, please explain it to me like I'm a smart 13-year-old.
Sure. So here's my perspective on it. A lot of work has gone into burying all the quantum physics in conventional computers. So, of course, the silicon that all the electrons in the silicon that transistors and our conventional computing is built off of, those are quantum particles that obey the rules of quantum physics. But much work was done by electrical engineers, material scientists, to make sure you couldn't see any of that quantum physics, and it just looks like an on-off switch that's either one or zero. And that's why computers work so well. The reason that physics was buried is because quantum physics is very delicate. So now the name of the game is to make that quantum physics manifest and things that may seem strange to us manifest, and then use that to be able to do computing better. So there's two main pieces of physics that are different there. One is what's called superposition. And so a quantum bit, instead of being zero or one, can be zero and one. And something called quantum entanglement, which frankly is hard to describe, and I think this means physicists don't totally understand it. But that's how quantum bits can, even when very separated from each other, still interact with each other and affect the outcomes of quantum circuits.
I understand a lot of the words you said. Maybe I'll have to sign up for one of your classes. Professor Johnson, let me ask you, talk about the progress U of I has made when it comes to quantum computing on its own.
Right. So University of Illinois, you know, here in Urbana, is really one of the leading institutions for quantum computing, thanks to work of Brian and many of his colleagues in the physics department and other folks, some of my colleagues in material science. We have specialists in materials, specialists in devices, specialists in coupling different types of devices together over in electrical engineering. And I think it's safe to say that, you know, we're one of the most sort of concentrated locations for quantum computing and, you know, quantum information research. And, you know, Brian and his colleagues in IQIST, the Illinois Quantum Information Science and Technology Center, are right in the middle of it. So, you add that together with some of the contributions from our colleagues at other institutions, around the state of Illinois. Really, the whole state of Illinois is a hotbed for this kind of work.
All right, we are going to take a break on the show. When we continue, we will be talking more with Harley Johnson and Brian DeMarco. They are both on the faculty in the Granger College of Engineering at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and they're both involved with the Illinois Quantum and Microelectronics Park, which is aiming to be a hub for quantum computing in Chicago in the years ahead. 800-222-9455 if you have a question about this. We'll be back after a short break. Stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the possibilities of quantum computing, a growing field of technology with potentially significant implications for our world in the years to come. This is, let's listen to a piece of tape we have. This is from a 2018 TED Talk by quantum physicist Shohini Ghosh.
A quantum computer is a new kind of device based on the science of quantum physics. And just like a light bulb transforms society, quantum computers have the potential to impact so many aspects of our lives, including our security needs, our healthcare, and even the internet. So companies all around the world are working to build these devices.
So I also, during the break, I asked ChatGPT to explain quantum computing to me to see if it could do any better. I don't know that it did a lot better. It's basically a really fast supercomputer that can do multitasking better than our current computers can, is what it said. My guests for this are Harley Johnson, who is the CEO of the IQMP. That's the Illinois Quantum and Microelectronics Park. Which is hoping that this will become a hub for government researchers and industry to work together on developing this technology in Chicago. We're also joined today by Brian DeMarco, who is a chief technology of the park. Both Professors Johnson and DeMarco are also on the faculty at the Granger College of Engineering at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. That's 800-222-9455. Professor DeMarco, you started studying quantum computing back in the 1990s, which is, I think, a lot before most of us lay people heard about this technology. How has the field changed in that time?
That's a great question. And that's right. Right before I came to University of Illinois in 2003, I was working on some of the earliest quantum computing experiments at the National Institute of Standards and Technology in Boulder, Colorado. And the field has just advanced so much, you know, and you can think about it in different ways. One is how many quantum bits are in a processor. So in those days, in a quantum computing processor, in those days, it took an army of PhDs, there were five of us, just to make two quantum bits work and do anything together. And these days, there are commercial devices provided by partners like IBM that have hundreds of qubits in them. And it means those devices can do so much more. So the size and the scale of these devices was really accelerated. And that's why many of us feel that we're getting to a tipping point where these quantum computers could have a real impact on society.
Professor Johnson, how did the idea for this quantum park start to come together?
Right. So this is all fairly recent, and I think it's fair to say that it started a couple of years ago when a group of us sat down and began to think about how to better position really the state of Illinois to be more competitive for some of the large programs that were coming out of federal funding agencies through the CHIPS and Science Act, which is really intended to help us as a nation be more competitive in microelectronics. And quantum is arguably a component of that. It's sort of the future of computing in many ways. And so we sat down and began to think about our strengths in the state of Illinois. And as I mentioned before the break, you know, the state of Illinois is arguably the strongest state in basic R&D and quantum computing. And so we looked at the needs of the industry, and in fact, we started talking to some of the leading quantum computing companies around the country to learn what their bottlenecks were as they thought about scaling up their technology. That's really the name of the game, is scale up, and Brian kind of alluded to that. And we developed the concept of a kind of a research and technology park for quantum computing, and the idea that we might provide some basic infrastructure that'd be helpful to these companies in order to help them get over the barriers that they were facing in scale up. And that's sort of the origin of the idea. It was a sort of a statewide initiative that has now taken on kind of a national flavor with support from the federal government as well.
Brian DeMarco, let's get into that idea of scale then, because there are smaller quantum computers out there right now. I've seen images and news reports. They kind of remind me of like a really expensive espresso machine you might see in a fancy coffee shop or something like that. What are some of the challenges with scaling that to become a bigger computer, the sort that can really have these transformational effects people have talked about?
Yeah, so that's right. There are small quantum computers out there now. However, they can't outcompute conventional supercomputers yet. So what's the challenge? So when I was talking about how the electrons inside silicon and the transistors in our computers are really quantum, but we hid all that quantum physics, we did that because it's so hard to see quantum physics. You have to isolate the quantum particles or the quantum device from the environment. So that's part of what makes this hard, and part of the challenges is we want to make bigger and bigger devices where we need to be able to send input and take output, which means it has to connect to the environment around it, but we still have to keep it very isolated. So there's challenges in manufacturing large vacuum vessels and large refrigerators that can cool these devices to just thousandths of a degree above absolute zero temperature, which is another way to isolate them. There are challenges in
Is the
making.
isolation you're talking about just because of heat, or why is that? Why do you need that isolation from the environment?
Okay, so that's a great question. That's because in some ways nature hates quantum physics. All right, so everything you see around you know, a bit in a computer, it's zero or one, and nature really wants it to be that way because of it, that bit interacting with everything around it really wants it to force like something you're used to in your everyday life. That's why everyday life looks the way it looks, is because quantum physics is suppressed by nature. So in order to make the quantum physics strong enough to use, you know, as I said, a qubit can be one or zero. That means it's, you can think of it as something which is pointing on the surface of a sphere, and it can be anywhere in that sphere. Nature wants it to just go to the top, the North Pole or the South Pole of that sphere. But we have to isolate it from the environment to keep it to be anywhere, which makes it something that's very different than what you're used to. So it's that constant interaction with the environment that wants everything in the universe to look very classical or not quantum.
This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about quantum computing and specifically the Illinois Quantum and Microelectronics Park. People are working to make Illinois into a hub for government, researchers, and industry to work together on developing quantum computing. That is based in Chicago. We're talking with the CEO of the OIQMP, Harley Johnson, and Brian DeMarco, who is the Associate Director and Chief Technology Officer at the park. They're both also on the faculty and engineering at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champain. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us. And let's go now to Paul calling from Urbana on line one. Paul, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I hope this is a good question. You mentioned the superposition and then the whole idea of the uncertainty involved in quantum mechanics. I understand that there has to be some kind of mechanism for monitoring and correcting for this, and I assume that would be a more conventional computing capacity. And it seems to me that we might get into this thing where maybe it would have been better just to increase the current computing capacity in the, I mean, I don't know. It seems like chasing one's tail in a way. You know, it could be just another ridiculous energy drain like Bitcoin and duplicative AI plagiarism machines that are operating right now. I'm sorry for the last digression, but I
No,
couldn't.
though I think those are valid questions, Paul. Thank you for calling in, and thank you for that. Professor DeMarco, I'll let you respond to that.
Oh, that's such a great question. So that's right. There needs to be a way to monitor quantum bits and what's happening in a quantum computer and correct it. And that's one of the big challenges. That's called quantum error correction. And so what you should think about, I think you touched on something, Paul, there that's so important. What you should think about is not that I'm going to have a quantum laptop someday, but that really a quantum computer will be a marriage between quantum processing units, central processing units or CPUs, and graphics processing units that are all work together. And that conventional electronics is going to be doing that error correction to make the quantum part of it work and provide an acceleration for those hard problems that we talked about earlier.
Professor Johnson, what about that energy aspect of this, though, right? It takes a lot to get one of these computers like that going in the first place. What about keeping it running?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something that's, you know, very much on the minds of researchers. And I think the news is good. Many of the types of quantum computers that are being developed do require, a fair amount of energy. But it's mostly energy in providing cooling, as Brian mentioned, keeping these devices isolated from the environment. A lot of that is about cooling and keeping them, isolated from thermal noise. And so it requires a fair amount of cooling. This is quite different, though, than the kind of cooling needs that we see in other big industrial applications. It's not even generally as energy hungry as data centers that are popping up all over the place. So, our hope is that this, in the long term, is a solution to energy problems and not creating additional energy problems. For example, one of the big applications that we're excited about is in climate science and in energy science. So, to the extent that we can develop some of these computing systems, get them operational and start solving these important problems, I think there's going to be a net benefit. So yes, there's energy demand, and a lot of that is associated with cooling because these still are big machines. But it's not a bad story at all. It's actually quite good when you compare it to other technologies.
Professor DeMarco, so a couple of generations ago, your forebears in engineering were working on room-sized computers. And now we've gone from iNAC to the iPhone 16. And we just heard we're not going to all have quantum laptops. But when you do think of where quantum computing is today, speculate for me. What could this be in our everyday lives, or maybe the everyday lives of our grandchildren a couple generations from now?
Yeah, so sometimes it's hard to speculate because I go back to when I was a kid in the 1970s and 1980s, and I would have never imagined that iPhone 16 that you just mentioned. I couldn't have even conceived of such a thing, a supercomputer that would go in my pocket.
Where's my hoverboard? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, where's the hoverboard? I know, Marty McFly had one. Where's mine?
Yeah.
So I think it is possible in the next 5 to 10 years, we'll see that there'll be, for example, in the city of Chicago at the IQMP, a large-scale quantum computer that you won't access directly, but that will be used for computing in the cloud, right? So right now, when you use ChatGPT, it's not running on your computer; it's running in the cloud and using services in the cloud to give you answers about what is a quantum computer and why does it work. So I think we'll see that, and then I think in future generations, what we'll see is that those systems will shrink. There'll be many more of them across the world that will still be used in a cloud computing capacity, or even as a supercomputer on a university campus to speed up scientific research.
And Professor Johnson, probably what will be our last question, only got about a minute and a half left, but talk about the idea of bringing, academics, government, private industry together to work on this. Why not keep it in the university?
Well, this is something that we believe very strongly is essential to making this technology work. As we've been discussing, it's really all about scale up. And there are many competing technologies right now. Many of them grew out of university research labs. But in some ways, the challenge now is an engineering challenge of just making these things bigger and making them work reliably. And so, the government's very interested all across the federal government. There are many companies, large and small, Fortune 100 companies, right, down to startups of 2 and 3 people who are working in a small company that's maybe spun out of a university lab. And all of these, all of these stakeholders are important to the success of the project, we believe. It's not only hardware, it's also software. So there are just many interrelated problems that have to be solved. And it's, we think, bigger than any one university. It's, it's bigger than any one national lab even. And so we're trying to bring all this together. It's sort of a Sputnik moment, we think, for the future of computing.
We will be watching. Harley Johnson and Brian DeMarco, thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Harley Johnson is CEO of the Illinois Quantum and Microelectronics Park. Brian DeMarco is Associate Director and CTO. They're both also on the engineering faculty, the U of I Urbana-Champaign. This park, as we've been talking about, it's coming to Chicago, and it is hoped that it will become a hub, a national hub, and maybe an international hub for the development of quantum computing. That's all the time we have for our show today. Coming up tomorrow, President-elect Donald Trump and his team have pledged to make major changes to immigration policy in America, including mass deportations of migrants and prosecutions of anyone who gets in their way. We'll talk about what those changes could look like and how that could affect us here in Illinois. This is a program that was significantly preempted last week by Jimmy Carter's funeral, so we are re-airing it tomorrow. And I should say that's all the time for today. The 21st Show is produced by Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.